Well, hello. Welcome to another lesson in the Lead Yourself First program. This is Tom Cooper, and I am very excited to be with you today. This is your personal growth program. It's your way to have access to a system that's going to help keep you on track, and it's going to help you as you grow. This is a resource that is of great value if you will use it. My mentor, John Maxwell, says leadership develops daily, not in a day. And Lead Yourself First is your system to help you develop the key skills that are going to help you today. This will be valuable for you if you will use it. So the question you have to ask yourself is, how will I use this? Now, this is not something I invented. It's something I've discovered on my journey as I try to understand leadership and influence and how to effectively get things done with others. I wish somebody had exposed me to these ideas, but I stumbled across them quite by accident. Putting these ideas into practice in my work and in my personal life, it transformed the way that I worked. And that's what excites me about personal development, because leadership skills are things you can learn, and they're very, very practical. Now, my goal in these lessons is not to be interesting or entertaining, but I'm not even here to inform you. My goal for you is how you're going to apply the things that we're talking about, and that's why I always ask at the beginning of a lesson, how are you going to act when we're done? What's something you can apply, change, or teach? We want to be a river, not a reservoir. You don't have to have all the answers. You just share the answers as we go. What are you learning? What can you teach other people on your journey? Now, I've been looking forward to this lesson. Have you ever sent an innocent email and had somebody get really mad at you? Have you ever said something that someone took completely the wrong way? It's ugly, isn't it? We spend so much time dealing with the consequences of poor communication. And if there's one thing that we all know, it's that communication can and does often go wrong. And that's the reality. Miscommunication happens all the time. And miscommunication costs us time and energy and productivity as we clean up after miscommunication. I recently read that David Grossman reported in The Cost of Poor Communications that a survey of 400 companies with 100,000 employees each, cited an average loss of $62.4 million a year because of inadequate communication to and between employees. This is a big deal that large companies lose a lot of money, and I will promise you that small organizations lose a lot of money too from miscommunication. Now, for most of you, today's lesson is going to be very, very helpful. And you'll put ideas to use right away, and you may see some big wins as a result. And maybe for you, you're going to want to go a little bit deeper. And if that's the case for you, at the end of today's lesson, I'm going to share with you something I think can help you go deeper and take this stuff even farther. Fair enough? So let's jump in. Today's lesson is about clear communication. How can you make sure that you are really clear? One great communicator, George Bernard Shaw, said, "The single biggest problem with communication is the illusion that it has taken place." And I think that's true. We've never lived in a time with more information than we have today. Our task lists are longer and more detailed. We've never been as busy as we are now, and we've never had as many different ways to communicate as we have right now. We have phone and paper and email and text and Facebook messages. And I've got, I think, at least three different instant message systems that I have access to right now on my computer, even as I'm standing here now. And, oh wait, four. Anyway, you want to get the right information to the right person at the right time, but how do you do that? Well, we're surrounded by the illusion that the communication's taken place. But how can it be that we could get to where our message is clear and it's simple and it's understood and it's acted upon by the person we want to communicate with? And that's really what today's lesson is all about. Now, there are three big ideas that I want to share with you today. They're simple to understand, and if you can use them when you're working with others, you're going to move beyond the illusion that communication has taken place and really become someone who actually connects with other people. And here are the three big ideas. One, Clear communicators do the hard work of making it simple for other people. 2, clear communicators know that each listener is unique. They're different from you, but different is not wrong. It's just different. And then 3, clear communicators have a big idea that they repeat for their listener. So clear communicators do the hard work of making it simple for other people. Clear communicators know each listener is unique. And clear communicators have a big idea they repeat. So let's talk about that first one. Clear communicators do the hard work of making it simple for others. Now, you may know that my background is in software and technology. I heard one software developer talking to another one time, and he said, my code is hard to understand. It ought to be. It was hard to write. It should be hard to read. Being clear in our communications is tough. The more we know about any given subject, the more tendency we will have to be complex in what we communicate. And it's really hard for those of us who see ourselves as specialists. I work with highly technical experts regularly, and I was talking with a data scientist. Now, what data scientists do is they take information from a bunch of different sources, and they try to find useful knowledge across all of those different sources. And there's a ton of science involved in that, and there's a bit of art, and it's a complex problem-solving, connect-the-dots type of thing. I was talking to my friend who's a data scientist, and he said, "Look, man," he said, I don't think it should be easy for people to understand. In fact, he said, it's really hard for me to figure out projections based on all these different data sources, and making conclusions is hard enough for me to do and be able to understand it. The last thing I want to do is figure out how to put it in terms that you would understand. But as true as it is with us technology folks, it's also true in other areas. All of us have trouble making our communication clear. It's because we often have a better understanding of what we do and how we do what we do than anybody else, no matter what job we do. And that close, that intimate understanding of the things that we do makes it hard for us to think like someone who doesn't know as much as we know. It's called the curse of knowledge. We believe that everybody knows what we know, and they don't. And then because we believe that everybody knows what we know, we end up saying things that make sense to us based on our knowledge, but they don't necessarily make sense to other people. I'll give you a really basic example. I saw a comedy routine the other day where comedian Brian Regan was making fun of the instructions on the side of a box of Pop-Tarts. Now, for making Pop-Tarts, they have 2 different options, and each of those options has multiple steps. Now, how hard can it be to warm up Pop-Tarts? Well, it turns out that requires instruction. I saw a video online that looked like it was a legitimate video to me. It surprised me. There was a worker in a factory, and he was given no instructions. He was merely handed a pair of earplugs, the kind you stick in your ears, and the string between them. And the label on the video read, "It's so obvious that no one would need any instruction." And in what certainly appeared to be an unscripted video example, the worker received the earplugs gladly and promptly inserted them in his nostrils. It's hard for us to communicate clearly because it's so easy to assume that other people know what we know, and clear communicators do the work of keeping it simple for other people. But let's go back to my data scientist friend. I mean, why doesn't he want to make things simple for other people? Well, fundamentally, keeping it simple requires work. It takes work to be simple. It's hard to figure out the essence of the information and put it into terms that make sense to others. And why does it feel like it's so much work? Well, most of the time, if we're going to be honest about it, most of the time we just want to show up and throw up. We don't want to prepare. We just want to come to a meeting and talk about whatever we want to talk about based on whatever happens to come into our heads. And why is that? It's because we're too busy. We're too busy to take the time to prepare before a meeting. And too busy to plan what we want to say. We're too busy. I would submit that we're often too busy to even think. So what happens? Well, you know what happens. I don't need to tell you. What happens is we miscommunicate. And miscommunication makes extra work, because when we miscommunicate, people do the wrong work. They do it to the wrong standard or on the wrong schedule. They show up at the wrong time or the wrong place. They do it in the wrong order or for the wrong customer. And if we had taken the time to be clear in our communication, if we had taken the time to plan how to make it simple for other people, we could have avoided all of those things. I'm reminded from the proverb from Poor Richard's Almanac, a stitch in time saves nine. If we stitch up that one little thread that's coming loose, we save all the ones that are down, you know, down the sweater from us, right? If we can make the time to fix that right away, if we make the time to communicate clearly at the very beginning, if we prepared a little better, if we'd taken the time to make that single stitch to fix the sweater, we could have avoided all the work of fixing the whole sweater after it came unraveled. Now, it's been decades for me since I was in college, and I remember as a kid when microwaves were first commonly available to people. It took a while to catch on, but even by the time I was in college, not everybody who came to campus had used a microwave before. And one of the folks on campus went to the convenience store, and he bought a frozen burrito. And he wanted to eat it, and he brought it to the lounge at the dorm, and he wanted to heat it up. And the directions said microwave for 1-2 minutes. But having never used a microwave before, he thought it must have been a misprint. Nothing could cook that fast. It must have meant 12 minutes, right? So he put the burrito in the microwave for 12 minutes, and while he was waiting for it to finish, he got bored, and he wandered back to his dorm room to get something. And when he came back, he found there was an RA in the lounge discharging a fire extinguisher into the open microwave to put out the flaming burrito. How hard can it be to heat up a burrito? Well, apparently, somebody assumed that people knew things they didn't know. So what does it look like if you're going to try and communicate in a way that's simple for other people? Well, first, it requires that we make the time to think before we speak. That we think about what the other person needs, and that we understand where the other person's coming from, and maybe what the other person's being measured on. Let's go back to that Pop-Tart example. The producer took the time to write instructions for removing the Pop-Tarts from the pouch, for inserting them into a slot on the toaster, for heating them for a single cycle, and allowing them to cool off, because they know that someone needs to know each of those steps. And that leads me to big idea number two. Now, I just introduced the idea that clear communicators do the hard work of keeping it simple for others. Now, let's talk about how clear communicators understand that each listener is unique. So I've got a client who's a project manager at a billion-dollar firm. And the CEO of this billion-dollar firm asked him to work on a research project. And this guy spent weeks doing research, analyzing options, deciding what was relevant. And then there came time for him to present the information to the CEO. And he was prepared. He went to the meeting with about 45 hours worth of content and 45 minutes to present his findings. Now, that meeting did not go well. My client said to me, "Tom, I knew I was in trouble almost as soon as I opened my mouth. His eyes virtually rolled back in his head, and he almost fell over dead during my presentation. What in the world did I do wrong?" Now, I know this guy. He's smart. He's prepared. He's detail-oriented. He also backed up the data dump truck, and he unloaded all the data he had as fast as he could in that session. The CEO must have been trying to drink from a fire hose. Have you ever done that? Have you ever known a lot about a particular thing and somebody asks you and all of a sudden you're unloading? That's what happened to my client. But just think about that for a minute. Did the CEO need all of the data? Does he need that information to do his job? CEOs, good ones anyway, focus on two things: increasing corporate revenue and decreasing operational costs. And every piece of data that's relevant to the CEO is filtered through that lens. Everything you communicate to a CEO ought to go through one of those two ideas. Is it going to help us sell more? Is it going to help us make more profit on the sales we've already got? I had a smart, capable, detail-oriented team member ask me, but Tom, how can you make a good decision if you don't have all the information? Well, it's because I'm different from you, because I'm focused on a few key measurements, because I see trends and themes and I see the big picture, and because my brain shuts down when you hit me with a lot of details. It's also because as we work together as a team, I understand your strengths and the things you're really good at, and if you make a recommendation to me and I trust you, then I don't need to have all the details. When my client was talking to his CEO, he needed to filter his data through the lens of how do we make more money based on your research, or how do we lower our operational costs based on your research. Now, my client and I talked about that, and we came up with a plan about what he would communicate to the CEO. And when he went back to the CEO, that meeting went far better. He said the CEO was engaged, and he asked him to drill down on a few points, and he asked for his recommendation based on his analysis of the data. You see, that's what happens when you realize that people are different from you. Now, I don't have at my command the time today to share with you all the ways that people can be different, but let me share with you a couple of ways that people can be different. One is learning styles. Some people like to read all of the details in writing. Others like to hear them out loud in person from you. Other people like to listen on audio or watch them on video where they can rewind and fast forward. Another thing, in addition to learning style, is level of detail. Some people want all of the technical details, and some people just want you to hit the high points. Now, I'm a big picture guy, not a detail guy, and loving the big picture doesn't make me smarter. I'm just different. I need different things. My high detail team member that I worked with, she was great. She was fantastic about helping me think about things that my big picture brain completely overlooked. And she helped me to see that some of my crazy ideas should die early, and some of my not so crazy ideas could be better thought out before we started out, so we'd have a far better chance of winning. And when my detail-oriented team member talked to me, she learned to tailor her message into less detail and more conclusions. And I learned, too. I learned that when I talked with her, I needed to think more about the details. And I needed to share them with her in writing before the meeting so that she had time to read them and think about them and comprehend those ideas when we talked about them. So let me ask you, are you more big picture or are you more detail oriented? Because whichever way you go with this, you're probably going to need to adapt your communication style to their preferred style. Different people are going to think differently about the message. And that's going to affect the way that they process the information, the way they respond to you, and the way that you work together. Some people are going to think about what the impact is going to be on them personally. Others are going to think about the impact on the group, and others are even going to think about how this is going to impact the company. And then there's the level of impact that might be involved. Some people want to personally analyze the details. Others are focused on how is this new information going to impact the team's feelings. Some people are focused on, okay, so what? What are you going to do differently now that you know this? And then other people focus on things like, how are we going to work together to overcome this? And when you get ready to communicate, you have to think about your audience. Who are you talking to, and what is it that they need? What's their learning style? What level of detail are they interested in? What type of impact is going to be relevant to them? And even if you end up with just one message after all your planning, having thought about the other person's needs is going to improve the quality of the communication, and it's going to improve the connection that you have with them. All right, so we've talked about how clear communicators do the hard work of keeping it simple for other people, and we've talked about how clear communicators know that each listener is unique. They're different. They're not wrong. They're just different. Now let's talk about number three. Clear communicators have a big idea that they repeat for their listener. When you're getting ready to communicate with somebody, you have to ask yourself, what is the most important thing for people to get from this meeting? And think about the last time you went to a team meeting, Seriously, take a second to think about it. Now imagine that someone walked up to you at the water cooler and asked you what happened at that meeting. Now think about the last meeting you went to and imagine that somebody's asking you what happened at the meeting. Now if you're like me, or many people, you're going to quickly fast forward through what you remember of the meeting, and then you're going to come up with a one or two sentence summary. Tom, what was that meeting about? Oh, Joe went over the project status, and oh, Reggie reported his team is 2 weeks late because they couldn't find the source they need. That's about it. And that meeting ran an hour, right? I mean, there were six different people in the room. A few of them spoke for more than 10 minutes. And all your friend or coworker gets from you is two sentences? Well, that's how it works. I call that the water cooler summary. That's when somebody reports out at the water cooler what happened at the meeting. And if you know that that's how it works, and it is how that works, take advantage of that. As you are preparing for the meeting, I want you to think about what's the one thing you want people to remember from this meeting. In this lesson, I told you there were three big ideas, right? My big ideas are clear communicators make it simple, they understand each listener is unique, and they repeat their big idea for the listener. So when it comes to your water cooler summary, you decide in advance what it is, and you put that big idea in as few words as possible. And when you open your mouth, you put those few words first. In the military, they refer to this as bluff, B-L-U-F, bottom line up front. Bottom line up front. People are too busy to think. We're swamped and we need help. What we need you to do for us is make it easy by telling us what you want. Put your bottom line up front. And if you want to reinforce that water cooler summary, you open the discussion with your bluff, you repeat your bluff during the meeting, and you repeat the bluff at the end. And then you also put that water cooler summary in the meeting minutes and in the email body when you send out the minutes. Before you meet with somebody, think before you speak. Set aside some time to think about what it is you want people to learn or think or take away from the discussion. Come up with one to three ideas you want them to have and be prepared to repeat those for your listener. In fact, you'll want to say them out loud as you're getting started. When you speak, use the bottom line up front, that bluff technique. During the discussion, you say your water cooler summary, and at the end of the meeting, say it again. You see this in politics all the time. Politicians call that staying on message. And why do they do it? Because it works. Okay, we're getting to the end of our lesson today. And as you think about today's three big ideas, I want you to think about how you're going to apply, change, or teach these ideas. Which of these big ideas is most relevant to you? What specifically can you do to improve your communication? Remember that the big ideas we talked about, clear communicators do the hard work of keeping it simple for others. Clear communicators know each listener is unique, different from you, not wrong, just different. And clear communicators have a big idea that they repeat for their listener. So take the next minute and write down your specific action plan based on today's lesson. And maybe you're sitting with a team as you listen to this, and if that's you, this is a great opportunity to have a conversation with a coworker about what we just talked about. What is it that your team can do based on this information? So for today's closing thought, I want to remind you the biggest problem with communication is the illusion that it's taken place. Clear communicators make it simple. They understand each listener is unique, and they respond with a big idea to their listener. And that's today's closing thought. Now, at the top of the lesson today, I mentioned that you might want to go deeper. And I want to take just a moment to talk about how people are all different, and different's not wrong. It's just different. Now, the really cool thing is that while people are all different, it's also true that people are predictably different. One of the tools I use with my clients to help them understand these differences and understand themselves better is called the DISC assessment. This is a simple way to understand how there are four basic ways people approach how they work and how they communicate. And when you understand these four and know where you fall and where other people fall on that, that can make a huge difference. I was talking with a client recently who said, I don't understand that guy. He's so easily distracted. He won't pay attention when I'm sharing valuable information with him. What's wrong with him? Well, it turns out they're both highly successful people. They're just different. And I was able to share some communication tweaks he could make to improve communication, and he got really excited. It was like he got the key to unlock a really important door. And he had. DISC is powerful. If you're interested in that, you can head over to brighthillgroup.com/DISC, and you can find a video about this and a link you can use to buy a DISC assessment. Or I'd love to work with you and your team on understanding yourself and your communication styles. Hey, thanks for being here today for this Lead Yourself First lesson, and I look forward to hearing from you next time.